Yeah. It's always difficult to stop such a powerful kol Torah. It's really very impactful and certainly very inspiring during this time period in specific. Shos Rabbi Donah. So I wanted to speak tonight in our second shiur on our series on the halachos of brachos. I wanted to speak tonight, explore with you what hana'ah requires a bracha. Last week we had our introductory shiur to what we call birchos hanehenin. Birchos hanehenin are brachos that we make on derivation of benefit, and we quoted the Gemara brachos on daf lamed hey, which says aser lo la'adam lehanos po me'olam hazeh below bracha. And that it's forbidden for a person to derive benefit from this world without first making a bracha. That's why we make a bracha before we eat food. And one who does derive benefit without first making that bracha, very severe description. Ma'al gazal, it's like he violates mi'ila, or such a person steals from Hashem. So we call this category of brachos birchos hanehenin, because it's a bracha that we make on benefit. And that really prompts the question, well, what type of benefit requires a bracha? We call it a bracha on benefit, but what constitutes a benefit? We have to define that term if we're going to be halachic thinkers. So as a test case for this question, we really need to analyze the Gemara that you saw tonight on the brachos Yodalid Amud Aleph. So let's read the Gemara together. We'll pose a couple of questions to structure, to organize our learning, and then we'll go forward from there. Also want to say at the outset that tonight's shiur was sponsored by my parents. Thank you so much for coming. And it's Li'iloi Nishmas, my bomama, my mother's mother, Adina Bas Chaim Yehuda Ubracha Zechona Lavracha, for her 25th yahrzeit this year. And our learning should certainly be Li'iloi Nishmas. And I'll share just a couple of words at the end of the shiur, a little bit more about my grandmother. So the Gemara Brachos Yidal, it says like this. Boi minei ashion tana devei Rabbi Ami mi Rabbi Ami. So Ashion asked Rami Abi, Hasharoi betanis, mahu sheyitom achila ushis, mahu sheyitom. Somebody who accepts upon him or herself a fast, what is the halacha? May they taste food. Do we say achila ushisia kabil alei v'haleka? Do we say that what they accepted upon themselves was not to eat or drink, to refrain from actual consumption, and when they just taste if they're to'im, then they have not eaten and they have not drunk. O dilma hana'a kabil alei v'ha'ika. Or maybe we should say that what they really intended was not to derive any benefit, and there is benefit when one tastes. So amar le to'im ve'im bekach klum. Rabbi Ami responds that such a person may taste, and ein bekach klum. So some of the Rishonim and the Achronim were taken by this formulation. To'im ve'ein bekach klum. They can taste, and there's nothing wrong with it. He could have just said they could taste. Why does he have to add ve'ein bekach klum? There's nothing wrong with tasting. So question number one. Tana nami hachi, the Braisa also says, mat emes eina tu'una bracha. Mat emes does not require a bracha. What's a mat emes? So Rashi in source number 2 defines mat emes as ti'imas tavshil, the tasting of a dish. So if you taste food, then that does not require a bracha. V'ashori betanis to'im ve'in bekach klum. And the Braisa also says exactly what Rabbi Ami said, that one who is fasting can taste and there's no problem with that. By the way, I'm not getting into the halachos of fasting. There's a whole discussion about whether this line applies to all fasts. Does it apply only to a personal fast that one accepts upon himself? So we're not getting into those halachos for tonight, but you shouldn't necessarily deduce halachic conclusions just from this gemar. So ad kama, how much can you taste? Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Yasi tamei ad shi'or rivi asa. So the Amoraim would taste up until the amount of a revius when talking about liquids, and the post can point out that the parallel would be a kezias for food. So a revius for liquids and a kezias for food. Okay. So what comes out of this gemara is that the tasting of food does not require a bracha as long as you taste less than a revius of the liquid. The question, though, is what exactly is the case that we're talking about? What does it mean that one is tasting the food? So there are two different opinions about how to read this gemara. Anybody see what those two different opinions are? Yeah, David, go for it. Give me a practical case, yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what the post can talk about. Let's say you want to taste your soup to see if it needs a little bit more salt. Exactly. So do you have to make a bracha? Okay, so there are two different, but there are two different explanations of what exactly tasting means over here. So if you take a look at Tosos, source number 3, they quote Rabbeinu Chanana. Pirish Rabbeinu Chananel, shechozer upolate. So David, what the case is that you taste it and then you discharge the food. You don't actually swallow it. Delo chashiv hana'a minati ima. Because if you just taste it on your palate, but you don't actually swallow the food, then that's not considered a bona fide benefit, and that would not require a bracha. This is Rabbeinu Chanana. Aval boleya lo. But to actually swallow the food, so then you would have to make a bracha. So according to Rabbeinu Chanana, even if I were just tasting the soup to see if it needs more salt, if I swallowed it, I would have to make a bracha. Yosef?
Isn't there a shear on how much to make a bracha in the first place if you're enjoying, like if you're actually eating it?
So only for bracha achrona. For bracha rishona, it can be even a kol shehu. It can be just a little morsel. As long as you are, according to Rabbeinu Chanan, as long as you're swallowing it. Yeah.
Usually when you're tasting food, aren't you swallowing it at the same time? I mean, it's like two different things.
So if you just had it in your mouth, and you didn't actually, it didn't go down your, I don't know, have biology here, but yeah, if you didn't actually swallow it, you spit it out, so then that would be the case according to Rabbeinu Chanan. Okay? Now, not all of the Rishonim agree with Rabbeinu Chanan. In source number 4, the Ra'ar, Rabbi Aaron Alevi, who was one of the Spanish Rishonim. So he writes that the case is afilu bibolas. Even if you do swallow some of that soup, you don't have to make a bracha if the purpose of you swallowing the soup was just to taste it to see if it needed some more spice. So we have a very, very important debate about how to read this Gemara. When the Gemara said, mat emes ina tu una bracha, what was the case of mat emes? What was the case of a taste? Was it that you taste it and discharge, or was it that you taste and swallow? According to the first opinion that it's tasting and discharging, that would mean that whenever you swallow, you have to make a bracha. According to the second opinion, that it's tasting and swallowing, so that means that even if you do swallow, you don't have to make a bracha up until you got to the point of a revius of a liquid. Okay, so that's the first debate to keep in mind about how to read the Gemara. And we'll see that this will be significant in reflecting on our essential question, which is what is the trigger that forces me to make a bracha? What constitutes the basis for making a bracha? What forces me? Yeah, Ita.
So I just want to ask a question on the Gemara. The Gemara's initial question is...
Tainus.
It's tainus, but it has to do with whether tasting is hana or whether it counts as eating and drinking.
Yeah.
So, but if you say tasting is spitting out, then the question doesn't even make sense because everybody agrees it's neither one of those. Why would I even ask the question?
So if it's you might have thought that just by tasting, just by having the taste on your palate, that would be sufficient to be to be in violation of your fast.
But everybody clearly says that's not hana. So like it's not like the question.
We'll see that there is a case according to some. There we could draw up a case where that does constitute hana. We'll see that it's not so clear. So maybe that was the havamina. Also, I want to point out that to'im ve'ein bekach klum, you can taste it and there's nothing. So does that mean that when you taste there is no hana? Or does it mean that when you taste, there is hana'a, but there's no achila? There's no eating. Let me clarify that, okay? So right now, we have a debate in the Gemara, how to read the Gemara, mat emes, tasting and discharging, or tasting and swallowing. What's the Rambam's opinion? So there's a whole debate about what the Rambam's opinion is. The Rambam actually distinguishes between the laws for fasts, and he seems to distinguish between the laws for fasts and the laws for brachos, which is interesting because the Gemara groups them together. I'm not going to get too much into the Rambam right now, but the Kesef Mishnah believes, Rav Yosef Cairo believes that the Rambam aligns with the Ra'ah, that when it comes to a bracha, you could even taste and swallow and not have to make the bracha. So now let's ask the next question. The Gemara says that when we get up to a revius, we have a revius of liquid. Okay, so I want to taste my wine to see if it's worthwhile to serve to my guests. If I have a revius worth of wine, then everybody agrees that I have to make a bracha. Why is that the case? Why does a revius change my calculation? So the first explanation, we're going to go through 3 or 4 different explanations, and these are going to be very critical for understanding what we're calling the mechayiv, the critical trigger for making a bracha rishon. The first explanation is a more technical one. It's of the Rashbats in source number 6. And he says that the reason why a revius changes things is because we can't trust a person to have a revius in his or her mouth without swallowing some of that revius. Meaning, you can only go so far to have so much in your mouth at one time and not swallow it. So the Rashbatz is assuming, like Rabbeinu Hananel, that as soon as you swallow something, you need to make a bracha. And if I have a revius, then I'm certainly going to swallow something. So if I have a revius, then I need to make a bracha beforehand. Okay, so that's the Rashbatz's explanation. But others took different approaches. So let's check out the Beis Yosef. Source number 7. Eitan, this is related to what you were talking about. Beis Yosef quotes a sefer called the Ohel Moed. Ubesefer Ohel Moed Kasuv. Mat emes eina tzricha bracha afilu lefaneha. Elo imkein hayasham kishir revius. A taste does not require a bracha beforehand unless you have a revius. Avo bezeh ashir mivareches. But for a revius, you would make a bracha. Afa pishe eina bolas klum. Even if you don't swallow anything. So for this opinion, the Ohel Moed, it's not about swallowing. The revius itself, just the revius being in your mouth without swallowing, that itself requires a bracha. Why? Hoil v'hachich to'im. Because your palate is tasting. So according to the Ohel Moed, what's happening here is that when you have a revius, you have what we would call an objective benefit, an objective hana'ah. You could stand from here until tomorrow crying out, I'm not trying to benefit. But the Ohel Moed would say that when you have a revius in your mouth, too bad. That's benefit. You can't really cut a corner over here. That's a benefit of your palate when you have a revius in your mouth. And on that, you have to make a bracha. So what emerges from the Ohel Moed? The Ohel Moed just found us a case where you're not swallowing anything. The only benefit that you're getting is on your palate. And nonetheless, you're going to have to make a bracha. Clearly for the Ohel Moed, what is the mechaye for a bracha rishona? What forces you to make a bracha rishona? The enjoyment. Yeah, Chaim, you said that? Who's it? Oh, Donnie. Yeah. So it's the enjoyment, the benefit. And not only any benefit, but even the benefit just of the palate. Right? It doesn't sustain you at all. It doesn't provide you with any nourishment. It just gives you a joy in your mouth, and that is sufficient to require a bracha according to the Ohel Moed. Take a look at the Rush, and then we'll go back to Beis Yosef. The Rush has a similar approach, but a little bit of a different nuance. So the Rush writes at the very end, "Umihu nir ad de bracha lo tzarech kevan she'eno nehene besuch me'av." So the Rush writes that when you have less than a revius, you don't have to make a bracha because you're not getting what we call hana'as me'ayim. What's me'ayim? The stomach. So you're not getting benefit of an actual nourishment. But once you reach the threshold of a revius, then that is considered objective nourishment. And in that case, you would need a bracha. So according to both the Ohel Moed and the Rush, the mechayiv of the bracha, the reason why I have to make the bracha is because I got benefit. They're just talking about two different types of benefit. The Ohel Moed is talking about the benefit of the palate, and the Rush is talking about the benefit of sustenance. Yeah, Akiva.
If you're tasting it to see if it needs salt, you don't know if it tastes good. You don't know. It might be gross.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess you're saying that beforehand.
You might not get any benefit.
Right. But I think that's a good question. Probably have to distinguish between it being gross and it just like not being the way that you want it. If you know beforehand that it's going to be gross and no one would eat it, so then it's not, you know, roi la'achilas adam, so then you wouldn't make a bracha. But probably when you're cooking the soup and it just needs a little bit more salt, so then you know that it's at least roi la'achilas adam, but it's not the perfect soup in the, Mireski household. Okay. Sorry?
If the taste is terrible,
yeah. But I'm saying you know based on the food that it's not going to be like. Yeah, Yosef. No, you're. It's a good child.
I was going to say that if the taste was really, if it's not very lachilas adam, then even if you swallow it, you wouldn't make a bracha.
Right. That's what I was saying. That's what I was saying to Akiva.
We're not talking about whether the chashat is really like it's dog food. Right, like it's garbage, but we're talking about...
Correct, it's just something that needs to be made better. Okay, so that's the Ohel Moed and the Rush. Now take a look at the Beis Yosef himself, at the Kesef Mishnah. So this is back in source number 7, second to last line. V'li nira debracha lo b'ti'im aschich talya. The Kesef Mishnah says, so the Kesef Mishnah writes, that the bracha is not dependent on the benefit of the palate, but rather, Ela ba'achila talia. The Beis Yosef says that what this is dependent on, whether you have to make a bracha or not, depends on whether we can say that what you did was eating. Kedichsiv ve'achalta ve'savata uve'rachta. Where do we say that? For Birkas HaMazon. Right? So even though that's for the bracha afterwards, the Beis Yosef is inferring from the bracha that comes after to the bracha that comes before. Just as the bracha that comes after is only for an achila, is only for eating, ve'achalta uve'rachta, so too for the bracha that comes before, the bracha rishona, has to be an achila. Ve'achila, hainu hanas me'ayin. The achila is only when you actually get benefit from a benefit of sustenance. So according to the Kesef Mishnah, when you drink a revius, that is considered objective shesiyah. That's an act of drinking. And an act of drinking, you have to make a bracha. So all in all, we have four different approaches as to why your revius makes a difference. There are ashvats, technically, because you can't hold that much in your mouth without swallowing. Once you swallow, you have to make a bracha, like we said from Rabbi Nuchanana. The Ol Moed, because you get objective hana'ah on your palate. The Rosh, because there's objective hana'ah from sustenance. And the Kesef Mishnah, because it's considered to be a form of eating. Yeah, Avi. Sure? Okay.
Why can't you say there's a difference of Achrona and Rishona? Anyway, like, the whole bracha Rishona is a matir to taste and enjoy the food. That's why it's Birkas Mehen versus afterwards, I guess, which is Birkas Shabbat or whatever. Why do both of them be linked? Why can't they be different reasons?
It's a chiddush. You're right. They could have been. They could have been different. Bracha Rishona could have been different from bracha Achrona. Absolutely. You don't find his argument anywhere before him. He came up with this idea. He's not saying it as like a... we know bracha rishona is midrabana, bracha achrona is midoraisa, right? But he's trying to look for a model of bracha on food and trying to derive from there. But in Achinami, you could argue with it, which is why we have others who don't accept that approach. Yeah, Arya? Same question? Yeah. Okay, so now let's go back to the Gemara. I want to just clarify that point that I made before, very shorthand. So I said, to'im ve'im bekach klum. Remember, the Gemara said, yeah, question? Yeah, please, hi.
I'm a little confused about the difference between the Beis Yosef and the Rosh, because it seems like they're saying...
Yeah, so the Beis Yosef is quoting the Rosh. You're correct about that. He's tying his opinion into the Rosh. But do you think that the Rosh would have to go as far as the Beis Yosef? Like, connecting back to the point that Yosef and Ariel were making before, that the Beis Yosef says that just as ve'achalta uve'rachta, we learn about Birkas HaMazon, that it's only for an achila that I make a bracha, so too for bracha rishon, it's only for an achila that I make a bracha. So the Beis Yosef puts the highlight on the achila. You think the Rosh would have to agree to that? Like, what if we could draw up a case?
I think that is what he's doing, because he's saying that the best, if you consider it hana, even if it's just right in his mouth.
Right.
Right, but for the bracha, it's not, because it has to be
tov me'av. So, but 100%. What I'm trying to distinguish between is hana'a b'soch me'av versus achila. Those are two, I would think that those are two different concepts. Achila is about the act, right? It's about how do you digest the food. And hana'a b'soch me'av is really the result. Is do you get the benefit of this food? If we could draw up a case where a person received hana'a b'soch me'av without doing an achila.
Talk about an IV.
Yeah, an IV. Right? We're going to talk about IVs hopefully next week. I'm not going to get to that tonight. But an IV would be a similar case, right? So would we say that hana'a b'soch me'av for the Rosh would require a bracha? I'm not sure. You got my distinction?
You're saying hana'a b'soch me'av without.
Without achila. Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's why I'm saying that the Kesef Mishnah is going a little bit farther than the Rosh, even though you're correct that he does rely on the Rosh. Correct, right. An achila that leads to a isvia and a bracha. And then a bracha before. Okay. So, So a very, very quick point. So when the Gemara said, the Gemara was weighing two sides, right? You have this guy, he says, I want to fast. But I want to also taste. So am I allowed to taste? Should we say that he accepted upon himself eating and drinking? Or should we say, no, he accepted upon himself even tasting? And the Gemara said he could taste. Ve'in bekach klum. There's nothing wrong with tasting. There's two ways to read that conclusion. Is that saying that he can taste because he only accepted upon himself eating and drinking? But there is a benefit that comes with taste. He just didn't forbid himself from doing that. Or do we say that, no, Toim ve'im bekach klum. There's no hana'a whatsoever from tasting. So the Rabbeinu Hananel, who said that you should taste it and then discharge it because there's no hana'a whatsoever, he's saying that the whole reason why you can taste is because there's no hana'a. If you say that you're allowed to swallow it, it's very hard to say that there's no hana'a. You swallowed it. There's hana'a besoch me'ayim. You're just going to say that if you swallow less than a revius, and you're also doing it for the purpose of tasting, you're not doing it for the purpose of eating, then we're not going to call that an act of eating. And since it's not an act of eating, so that's not what you accepted upon yourself. Yeah.
Well, wouldn't you argue, I know, like, by Yom Kippur, so sure.
Right.
I would argue that it falls short on both fronts, in that you have no hana because of the either. I can't imagine you actually get hana. It might keep you going if you're sick, so...
So I think the assumption is that any amount of food can cause hana b'soch me'ayim. I don't think it's right. You don't necessarily feel it, and also in that case, you're intending to eat. I mean, you're treating that very little bit of food as food, right? That's a key distinction, because all that we're talking about is only on the premise that you're intending just to taste. You only care about the taste of the item. If you're eating it, but you want to eat it, then it goes back to what Yosef was saying before. You could have a little morsel, and as long as you're intending to eat it, you have to make a bracha on that. So that would explain the Yom Kippur case. Okay, so now let's bring all of this analysis. Let's try to make this practical. So first we're going to get into the psak halacha. How do we actually paskin on this sugya? And then we'll get into a number of practical cases. So for example, we could think about it as we do the psak halacha. Are we going to make a bracha on gum? Do you make a bracha on Listerine strips? Do you make a bracha when you're chewing food for your little baby? Or if you taste something for your little baby? Or if you you bite open an ice pop and some of the ices gets, you know, you end up having some of the ices. Do you make a bracha when you're opening it for your kids?
You just try to taste the food. Like when you're cooking, I'm saying.
Yeah, so that's the classical case, what David was talking about before. So that'll be the case that we actually have in Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll have to apply it to all the others. Rabbi Donat.
I was just saying, we also throw in
Ooh, out. Okay, right. What does that, and Yosef was asking me also about this week, what about tasting not kosher? Okay, so we're probably not going to allow that either, but anyway, but it was a theoretical Shiloh, theoretical. Okay. What? Not kosher gum. Well, I think that's going to contradict what will come out our conclusion for tonight on whether we make a bracha on gum. So we'll discuss. Okay.
Whiskey test.
Yeah, I'm an Amar. It's come on.
You're literally tasting it. You're not swallowing it.
Oh yeah.
As someone who actually has self control.
You taste it. But there you spit it out? Oh, really? What? Oh, that's gross. Okay. Okay. All right, great. Those are good test cases. All right, let's get to the psak halacha. Here we go. We're running out of time. Having too much fun. Okay. Source number 10. Shulchan Aruch and Reish Yud says like this: Hatoim es hatavshil eino tzarich levarich ad revius va'afilu im hu bolo. If somebody is just tasting something and they don't have a revius and they swallow, even if they swallow it, they don't need to make a bracha. V'yesh omrim sheim hu bolo ta'un bracha v'lo patru es hatoim ela keshachozer upolit va'az afilu al harbe eino tzarich bracha. So, and then others say that no, the only time that you don't make a bracha is if you're going to emit that which you tasted, but if you're going to swallow it, then you would have to taste. So we learned that in the Gemara, right, everyone? In the first opinion is the Ra'ah. The second opinion is Rabbeinu Hananel. Shulchan Aruch quotes both opinions. Stam v'yesh omrim. Usually the Iker Hadin follows the Stam. Usually, there are exceptions to that. But the Ramah says over here, v'safik brachos lahakel. So the Ramah says, since we have a debate between the Ra'ah and Rabbeinu Hananel, we're going to be lenient about this. Safik brachos lahakel means, when we're pressed and we don't know whether we should make a bracha, we abstain. We don't make the bracha. Yeah,
hi. It sounds quite as lush that it's like the diabet. If you swallow, you're trying to taste it, and then you swallow. But it sounds like if you're tasting it.
Interesting. I don't know. I didn't read it that way. I thought he was trying to emphasize the chiddush. He was trying to say, afilu imubolo. Like, don't be mistaken that this is only if you spit it out, even if you swallow. That's how I read it. But I hear. Okay, so the Rama saying Safik Brachos La'akel, which means that Me'ikr Hadin, we're going to hold like the Ra'a, that if you're tasting your soup and you want to know whether to add salt, and you end up and you're going to swallow it. So as long as you are doing that with the kavana, with the intent just to taste it, you're not interested in eating the soup, so then you would not have to make a bracha. However, the Mishnah Brura in source number 11, second page, so go down to Sif Yud Tes, Safik Brachos Lahakel, so skip to the bold. V'hinei ha-magin Avram cholik ala Shulchan Aruch v'harama. So the Magen Avram disagrees with this psak of the Shulchan Aruch. The Magen Avram says that no, if you swallow it, then you do have to make a bracha. And then he says that many Achronim do agree with the Rama, but since there's a debate between, you know, the big leagues of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama on the one hand and the Magen Avram on the other, so therefore lechatchila tov li zaher harotze livloa sheyiskavin lehanos mimenu betoras achila v'yivarech alav. Whenever you're performing one of these tastes, so Avi, you're cooking for Shabbos, right? And you're making your chole, you're making your soup, whatnot. You want to taste it to see what it needs. So the Mishnah Brura says that what you should do is go out of your way to intend to eat it. Because if you intend to eat it, then everybody would agree that you have to make a bracha. If you're only intending to taste it, so then you would not make a bracha.
You eat it tomorrow.
No, right now. Like when you taste the soup, right? I take a little spoonful of the soup. I want to see, does it need some salt? I'm about to put it into my mouth. I should have in mind, I want to eat this right now. I'm not doing this just to taste it. I also want to enjoy that little bit of soup. Because if I do that, then everybody will, then I'm on everyone's page. Everyone agrees I have to make a bracha. If I do it with the intent just to taste, then I'm Yori the Machlokas. Then I have a debate between Shulchan Aruch and Ramah versus the Magen Avram. Now, we'll be lenient in that case, and we'll say not to make a bracha, but why not get out of the question and just eat it with the intent to eat, and then you make a bracha. Good? Okay, so that's the classical case, traditional case of tasting your food when you need to know whether it's whether it needs any more spice. Okay. So now let's get into one other case where clearly you have intent to eat. So the Kaf HaChaim quotes the practice of Toameha. Toameha. Right? So Toameha is where you taste food before Shabbos. Right? Toameha Chaim Zachuba. So you taste food before Shabbos to enjoy some of Shabbos, to get ready for Shabbos. So in that case, you're clearly having the intent to eat it because that's the whole purpose. So you say, even though we call that Toameha and you're only having a little bit of the Kugel or whatever, so you should certainly make a bracha in that case. What about gum? What about Listerine strips? Cases where you're actually not going to swallow anything. So take a look at source number 13, 12. Source number 12. Shulchan Aruch writes in Reish Beis, Al hasukar mevarech shahakol, v'chein hamotzitz kanim misukos shahakol. If you have like a sweet stick, like a sugar stick, sugar cane, right? So the Shulchan Aruch says you make a shahakol when you suck on a sugar cane. So the Mishnah Brura explains, why do you make a sha'akol when you suck on a sugar cane? 13. Gam kin mitam anis kol eldo ha'kona be'atzmo who eats bi'alma. The sugar cane itself is just some wood. V'yasher lo'ochlo. You can't actually eat that. Ela she'yesh bo mesikus. But it does have some sweetness to it. V'im kein lo'adif ha'motzeites ha'mesikus me'ha'etz me'ilu sochat es hazeya hazos ushresa'o. The sucking out the sweetness from the sugar cane is exactly the same thing as turning the sweetness of the cane into a you know, some type of steam, some type of liquid, and actually drinking it. So that's just the way, that's the normal way that you derive benefit from this item. You eat the sugar cane by sucking out the sweetness from it. So therefore, the Mishnah Brura says to make a shahakol. Based on this Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Brura, many, many poskim, almost all poskim, agree that when you have sugar-filled gum, so let's take bazooka, okay? So if you have bazooka that has sugar in it, yeah? So then you have to make a bracha, because even though you're not going to swallow the piece of gum, but you're treating the gum exactly like the sugar cane. You are deriving the sweetness from the piece of gum. So therefore, you have to make a bracha. And Tani, therefore, that would go against what you said, there being a permission to eat non-kosher gum. I don't think that's true. It's definitely not true, because we consider gum just like the sugar cane. There are those who disagree and say not to make a bracha on gum, but you know, Rov Minyan Ubinyan, most of the poskim disagree and say that we would make a bracha on sugar filled gum. But what about when, yeah,
like a sucking candy, but, for medicine. Give a sore throat.
Yeah, so we'll discuss more of that next week. I want to talk. We'll talk about IVs.
Sugar,
we'll talk about medicine next week.
Sugar-free gum.
Oh, sugar-free gum. Okay, so in sugar-free gum, the taste is coming from chemicals, right? What did you say, Talia?
It still has sweetener. Why would it make a difference?
It still has sweetener. It's not, but it's not coming from sugar. Instead, it's coming from chemicals. Okay, so maybe we could argue more. I agree with you, but there is at least a little bit more of a counter argument to say, oh, that's not real. Like that's not actually food. That's not food, right?
Then there's no that's not. If you're having sugar.
But it seems like in this case. We don't. So if you look at the Piske Chuvos, he says, oh, you're not going to be able to have the gum without having hanosmiayim because you're going to swallow some of the sweetness. I don't really know what that means. You're swallowing your saliva, right?
But the point
over here is that the way to eat it is not with hanosmiayim. The way to eat it is just to take the sweetness out of the thing. That is the way to derive benefit from it.
But the Piske Chuvos said that you are getting hanosmiayim. So I don't know if you would agree.
About you're saying the sugar-free gum?
Sugar-free gum.
Oh, so you're saying that's not hanos meyayim because it's chemicals.
It's not hanos meyayim. Your body doesn't do anything with that.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, so...
I think
he says not like that. But okay, meaning the debate here is going to be whether we can compare the sweetness of chemicals to the sweetness of actual sugar. Most poskim, again, agree that you should make a bracha even on sugar-free gum. But some say that to get out of the suffix in this case, try to make a shahakol on something else first, and then you have the sugar-free gum. The same exact thing would be true about the Listerine strip. So what do Rav Schachter say at the end of the day about Listerine strips? So you should make a bracha if you're eating them like... Okay. So there's multiple issues with the Listerine strips, but one of them is that if you're having it just to freshen up your mouth, so everybody would agree not to make a bracha. Because what's that case? You don't have any intent to eat. You just have intent not even to taste. I mean, just to, I guess, get the freshener out of the product. That's not eating. And we saw over here, based on our sugya, that would not require a bracha. But if you have those cinnamon ones or the mint ones and you really like them and you pound them, you go through 3 packs a day, so clearly you want them, right? So, what? Okay. So then, in that case, you should probably make a bracha just like the gum.
Maybe water.
My kid with toothpaste will go for like hours if you let them.
I saw in the Sefer Vizos HaBracha that he discusses whether about that case, but it's difficult to assume. I mean, I don't know, it's a kid, fine, but for an adult. Right, because you're spitting it out and you're not drinking, you're trying not to drink it. Okay, all right, so halacha lemaisa, that's how we would come out. So, Okay, so at the end of the day, we started with the sugya on brachos daf yedal about mat emes. We had the machlokes nishonim between Rabbeinu Chananel and the ra'ah about what the case is, and then we discussed why a revius makes a difference. We ended up saying that there are a number of ways we could describe the mechayev of a bracha rishona. Why it is we have to make a bracha? Is it because of hanoas hachich, the benefit of the palate, hanoas me'ayim, the benefit of the stomach? Or is it the Maisa Achila that requires the bracha? And then we got into the Halacha L'Maisa. We noted that according to the Mishnah Berurah, you should try to avoid the suffix by having intent to eat. If you don't have intent to eat, then we would be lenient. We wouldn't make a bracha, except for in cases where the normal way to enjoy the item would be without actually digesting the item, but just taking the sweetness out of it, like the sugar cane, and like the gum. So I just want to share a couple of words about my Bamama. It's funny that this shir happened to coincide with Bamama because one of my only, I was very young when my Bamama passed away. I think I was 6 years old. So I have very, very few memories, unfortunately. But one of the only memories I have is we went to Moriah for some play or something like that of one of my siblings. And Bamama was with us and she always had gum with her. Am I right about that? She always had bazooka to give to the grandkids. Am I right about that? So everybody's kids. So it was such a siyata dishmaya that happened to be that this topic. I was like, how am I going to tie this topic? But it's really from the little things about a person you can really derive a lot. My grandmother was someone who was a very caring person. And really saw the needs of the people around her. And also, you know, just in a different, you know, very like different connection. But she would always be someone who walked around in a presentable form, in a presentable manner. She always took care of everything that needed to be taken care of in terms of how refined she was, walking around really like a, I think I said last year, like a Jewish princess. And that's really who she was. Hopefully this these Divrei Torah should be a zichar on the Eloi Nishmasa.